and my true love will never meet again on the bonny, bonny banks of Loch Lomond.
All right, with that, I think we've set the mood properly, don't you think, John Ash?
I do. I think I need to get a picture, and we'll post it, of you in your... It's a tartan, isn't it? Kind of hat.
It is a tartan hat. What you really need is some ginger hair coming down.
Well,
you
that's
look
not
just
happen.
Great. That happens at the rugby. It's great.
That beautiful voice belongs to Fiona Bird, our special guest live in the Chaos Arto kitchen today. Fiona is the author of several books, including The Forager's Kitchen and Seaweed in the Kitchen, and she will be appearing live today in San Francisco at Omnivore Books on Food. That's on Cesar Chavez Street in San Francisco. From 3 to 4 o'clock, you can meet her and get an autographed copy of these wonderful books. Thank you for coming to Santa Rosa today.
Well, yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
So you were saying you haven't been to California a lot.
I haven't been to the States before.
Is that right? At all?
At all. The reason I'm here is because I've got 6 kids, and number 6 is at the University of California, Santa Barbara. Yeah. So I got an excuse to come.
And is it a he?
It is a he.
And what does he do there?
He's doing chemical engineering. Oh. He's having a year from Imperial College in London. Yeah. And I'm jolly pleased he is. So our family pushed us to come and visit.
Oh, that's fantastic. So you're from, and Steve, God love him, he's such a researcher, pulled out a map. You're from the New Hebrides.
The Outer Hebridean Island. Yeah. Well, my husband is a GP, and the Outer Hebridean Island of South Uist, which is about 40 miles from the Scottish mainland. But we met at university in St. Andrews, and we've also got a house on the mainland, so I can occasionally get to shops and things.
I printed out for you, John.
Yeah, I just glanced at it. It's pretty funny.
It's 17 things to know before you go to this particular place. It's spelled UIST, and it says here, Fiona, rhymes with tattooists.
Tattooist. Uist.
Uist.
Yeah.
That's the honor. And let me read a little bit about Fiona from her book, The Forager's Kitchen. Fiona Bird is a graduate of the University of St. Andrews, mother of 6, and a former BBC MasterChef finalist. She divides her time between Angus and the Outer Hebridean Isle of South Uist.
Uist.
Where her husband is the local doctor. Fiona is often seen on a bicycle with a basket full of seaweed or other wild edibles and is rarely late for church.
Whew. Well, I love
that.
Actually, can I correct that? It's a misprint. We're always late for church. We're always late for church. That's why I wrote it.
So some of these 17 things, when we come to visit you, prepare for cold and solitude, which goes along with always have a whiskey stash. I guess that's to keep you warm.
Keep you nice and cozy, yeah.
Yeah.
And then to find the music, you'll have the road to yourself, not much traffic where you...
Well, you might have a few sheep.
You have a few. And do you know the funniest one, John, and all of this is number 6. Turn to number 6.
Yeah, I got it.
Because last week on this show...
Yeah.
We had the owners of a place called Hell's Backyard Grill. It's in Boulder, Utah. It's the most remote restaurant of anywhere in the United States. And we had a discussion about the one-finger greeting with them last Saturday. Mm-hmm. And that was, you're driving along, and you don't take your hands off the steering wheel, you just lift a finger to wave. Is that what you do in
Scotland? That is exactly what happens. And lovely Dr. Stephen Bird... I have to fess up to this. When we go to the mainland, he insists on doing this. So everyone thinks he's a very courteous, jolly driver, but that's what happens on the islands. You're kind of waving.
It's unlike it is here. The one finger greeting here means something else.
Let's not go there.
So if we'd like to visit you in Uist, it's a quick flight from Glasgow, isn't it?
Do you know, it is actually. It's the Loganair, you can get there in under an hour. The way I go is via Carmack ferries, and that's a bit of a journey.
And there's
because of the weather, quite often the ferries don't go. And the thing about cooking is, you know, obviously all the food is delivered to my one and only supermarket by the ferry. So if we don't get a ferry running, we have empty shelves, which is why I started cooking with seaweed.
It makes perfect sense.
Perfect.
These islands are the most westerly of the Scottish islands. It's very remote. And do you live in the north or south part?
We live in the south.
In the southwest?
Yeah.
Okay.
It all happens on Benbecula in the middle. That's where the airport is. And they've got a few shops there. We have a supermarket. In fact, I think there are two supermarkets. There's one up towards Benbecula.
So,
but my end.
So because of where you're at, weather is pretty rough. Often,
yeah.
Because
yeah.
you're exposed to the sea in a very direct way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to say we have had the most amazing summer this year with so little rain and aquamarine blue seas. And if you'd been a tourist there, you could have been in the Caribbean. And I gather that for the 2019 places to go, the Outer Hebrides has hit the spot. It's on the list.
Mm.
But I would suggest you go there between April and July.
Mm. Best times. Did you grow up foraging?
I grew up foraging. Yeah, my paternal grandmother was a great forager. And she'd take us out to go and pick up sticks for her cottage fire. And I remember her saying, you know, it's not a question of just looking up, it's looking down, it's looking around, it's just looking. And walks with her were always great fun, with a sense of purpose. You know, what child, especially nowadays, really wants to go for a walk, especially on a sort of wet and cold Hebridean island. But sometimes, you know, just getting out there and foraging, I think it's a great family activity.
Mm. What about your six children? Tell us their names.
Right, we have Xander, who is now a chartered accountant with British Airways. And the next one down is called Jonty, who is the most amazing chap, but he's getting a bit wrapped up in tax at the moment. I don't know how long he's going to do that for. And the next one down is my one and only daughter called Lily, who, like her daddy, is a doctor.
Is she the popcorn gal? There's a recipe for beach popcorn in the book.
Oh, no, that was a lovely medical student who came attached to the practice.
Oh.
Was she called Elodie? Gosh, I need to go and look her name up. Anyway, right. I was testing the recipes for the forager's kitchen, and she said, I had lots of dried seaweed, and she said, this would be great with popping corn. And so we did it. It was amazing. Mm. I hadn't come across seaweed popcorn before, but since I've written that book, it's everywhere. Mm. It's a really cool thing to make.
So the daughter's Lily. Continue on.
The daughter is Lily. So the next one down is called Alistair, who's training to be an accountant, and he's down in England. And then we have number five is Xavier. So when you have lots of boys, you can tell them French with the names.
So those are
to.
The most unusual names. I
have
They're to
tell. So cool. But, you know, when
They're
you have
very
your
cool.
fourth son, Xavier. Yeah, I think we'd been to France and I'd read about Uncle Xavier. So I thought Xavier was a good name. He calls himself Xavi. And he's actually into radio. He does fresh air radio at Edinburgh University. So he's the radio one. And then we have the one that's at Santa Barbara. And that's the reason I'm here. So I'm jolly glad.
Who is the one that is enamored with elderberry?
Oh, that's Xander. That's Xander. And, you know, I brought you a few pots here. So the favours for their wedding, they had elderflower cordial, which they gave everyone a bottle. Mm. And they also gave them some Uist lava. That's like nori, porphyra.
Uh-huh.
So they dried that. So you can have a look at that if you want. There's a little message on there.
So we'll get into this as we talk about some of the seaweeds and things. But nori in your part of the world is different than the nori in Japan or the nori that is harvested here.
Yes.
Are they different species?
They're different species.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to quite quickly say I'm not a marine scientist. I started cooking with seaweed on South Uist because in Angus we've got lots of glens and hills and woods, hedgerows. And on Uist, I really just have seaweed. I mean, there are a few forested areas, but in South Uist there aren't any trees. So that's why I got into seaweed. And I was cooking with lava. Now, I did know a little bit about lava because the Welsh make something called lava bread, which they cook the lava. Well, they sort of boil it
out. And this is L-A-V-E-R.
L-A-V-E-R. Yes. That's porphyra. Yeah. And they sort of boil it up for about 2 to 4 hours, and you get this green gloop.
Mucilaginous.
They then have oatmeal and they make it into little cakes that they fry and they have it at breakfast. So I did know about lava before my husband took the job on the island, but I really didn't realise that nori was a completely different species as that's farmed, and that the lava that I find up in the Outer Hebrides, you can't compare that to nori. It would be like calling English sparkling wine champagne.
Before we came on the air, you threw a statistic at me, which I found astounding, that there are more than, is it 10,000 different varieties?
10,000 different seaweeds
out there.
Yeah.
So we see these things thrown around about, well, use kombu or use kelp or do something. You can't just assume that there are only four or five, that you have to kind of look for that which is most appropriate for the dish that you're doing.
Well, yes. I mean, I don't know. Do you have carrageen? If I say carrageen,
mm-hmm. We do, but we never. I don't think we ever see it in its seaweed form. We only see it in its processed form.
This is carrageen, which is great for vegan cooks. Mm-hmm. If you smell that, I think it just smells wonderful.
Mm. Oh, it does. Are you a vegetarian?
I'm not a vegetarian, but this is great for vegan folk mm-hmm. who want to. You know, who aren't able to eat gelatin. So I knew about lava and I knew about carrageen and I didn't really know anything else. So if you look at these carrageens, which you'll see that one is quite irregular shape,
mm-hmm.
that's Condrus crispus, and this one I describe as a bit like a Brillo pad, and what actually happened to me was, I think the Stephen's practice nurse, Kathleen, brought some carrageen in. She brought me a bag in. And, you know, because I was learning from the textbook, I thought, oh, yeah, is it Condrus crispus? Well, no, it doesn't look as regular as that. But hang on, this is an islander. She must know her seaweeds. Mm. And what she actually gave me was something which we call great pipweed or Mastocarpus stellatus. And then I went away and did some reading afterwards, because I found I got a much better set from that than I had from this Condrus crispus. So I realised that actually seaweeds, even carrageen, can look very different, and its setting ability is different. And what I have learned since I wrote Seaweed in the Kitchen is I'm pretty certain that there are variations at different times of the year, as well as geography. So it is quite complicated.
So when we see the carrageen in our market, which is usually in the powdered form, to use as a substitute for gelatin, which
so
is animal-based.
It's ground. You don't see it like this.
You see it like this fresh.
Yeah.
And interestingly, it often accompanies oysters or shellfish. It's kind of a something that is used to, I don't know, keep them alive, keep them moist.
But this has got an amazing setting property.
Yeah, yeah.
So when I wrote the first edition of Seaweed in the Kitchen, I used it. There's a Hebridean recipe, which is basically like a blancmange, a mousse. And so I used milk and I used egg. And that something happens. There's a chemical reaction between the carrageen and the milk. You get an amazing set. It's much more difficult to set, say, a lime jelly where you're just using fruit juice and water than when you're using the milk to make a blancmange. But in the new edition of Seaweed in the Kitchen, I've used coconut milk and almond or soya milk.
Because
so it'd be great for the vegans.
You have a couple of panna cotta, which is the same idea, kind of a custardy kind of dish that's set typically gelatin. But again, if you're vegan, you can't use gelatin.
This is something which that book was written in 2015, and in the UK, I'm not quite sure. Is it the same in the States that there are a lot more vegans?
In the States?
Well, then there were, say, maybe three to four years ago.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
I mean, it's quite big in the UK.
Yeah.
So I'm not a vegan, but I suddenly realized that actually by adapting a recipe and by putting the coconut milk and the soy milk in, it was an excellent vegan recipe. And it tastes good too.
Well, it sounds like we're starting for the discussion on Seaweed in the Kitchen, the first book, since we've dove into seaweed. So we'll do that one first, and then later in the show we'll do The Forager's Kitchen.
Well, let's do The Forager's Kitchen.
Do you want to do that one? Yeah. Well, I just want to say that I learned a magnificent new word. I never knew the word phycologist. This was why I can sound so erudite with my friends.
Well, I find it quite scary, because if you go, I brought one of these. I discovered a little group of people who I call the Victorian Seaweed Sisterhood, and these were Victorian ladies who gathered seaweed, and they were in the States too. I didn't sort of research them too much, but there's a job there for someone, and they weren't called phycologists in those days. They were called algologists. And now I don't really know the difference between the two words. Which do I use?
Yeah, but mainly a phycologist is a student of seaweed.
Yeah.
Which I thought was marvelous.
It is.
Did you know this word?
It's a whole new, it's a whole new area of study. I'm going to college and I'm going to become.
Well, I had a major problem with it, because I read psychology and theology at St. Andrews. When I was writing phycology down on my little Mac, it corrected it to psychology.
Oh, instead of phycology.
Yeah. I had to teach it the word.
Well, you did have a problem. We'll take a break at this point. Fiona Bird is with us live in the KSRO studio kitchen this morning. She's written The Forager's Kitchen, 100 Field-to-Table Recipes, and also Seaweed in the Kitchen, The Coastline Kitchen. She's visiting us from her beautiful remote area of Scotland. And later this afternoon, she will be at Omnivore Books, the wonderful cookbook store on Cesar Chavez Avenue in San Francisco, from 3 to 4. If you're in the Bay Area and going to be in the city, you might want to swing by and meet the delightful Fiona Bird and get some autographed copies of her book. Steve Garner in the KSRO kitchen, back after this.
I'm DeMarcus Cousins of the Golden State Warriors. I'm Boogie. Warriors basketball on KSRO.
Hello, Stan Klaus of Crandall Roofing here with great news for Sonoma County. No doubt many of you have heard that construction is booming in our area, and as a result, wait times for reputable contractors have grown to months or even years. Well, I'm happy to report that Crandall Roofing has been able to add to and restructure our personnel to reduce our wait times for residential re-roofs to weeks, not months. That's right, wait times at Crandall Roofing have been reduced to weeks, not months. So even though construction is backed up in Sonoma County, you can still have a factory-trained, Diamond-certified company with thousands of satisfied customers install your roof. To get the process started, just give Crandall Roofing a call at 586-2500. That's 586-2500, or find us on the web at crandallroofing.com.
Over 5,500 people in the Greater Bay Area have trusted the re-roofing of their home to Crandall Roofing. Shouldn't you? Call 586-2500.
Who doesn't love a quickie? You will at Inform Fitness of Northern California. In just one or two 20-minute weekly sessions, you'll build strength fast using the revolutionary science-based method. Feel the difference 20 minutes can make. Strength is the new healthcare. Start getting strong in the new year with a free introductory session and get $50 off your first 2 months. Go to informfitness.com/Rohnert Park and sign up for a free workout today. informfitness.com/Rohnert Park.
Fogline Vineyards is opening their tasting room to Sonoma County locals for a weekend of wine tasting January 26th and 27th. They'll be pouring their gold medal 2014 Russian River Pinot Noir and exclusive 2017 Flora, among others. Sonoma County residents can enjoy a free tasting of 5 Fogline wines and find a new favorite. Fogline Vineyards open house for locals Saturday and Sunday, January 26th and 27th, 12 to 4:30. FoglineVineyards.com.
Join George Adair of Bay Equity Home Loans every Wednesday from noon to 12:30 for On Air with George Adair on KSRO. George helps homeowners understand real estate and lending. Whether you're looking to purchase your first home or expanding your real estate holdings, George will help you navigate the world of home loans. George talks with community guests, covers local topics, and shows you how the larger world economy affects your bottom line each Wednesday from noon to 12:30. On Air with George Adair on KSRO.
Your dream job is hiring. Wednesday, January 23rd, join the County of Sonoma, Star Staffing, Recology, La Tortilla Factory, and 50 more local employers at the North Bay Job Fair, 3 to 6 p.m. in the Grayton Resort and Casino Ballroom. The event is free to job seekers. That's January 23rd, 3 to 6 at the Graton Resort and Casino. Come find your dream job. NorthBayJobFair.com.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
Fiona Bird joining John Ash and Steve Garner in the KSRO kitchen live today. If you are of Scottish descent and would like to talk Scottish with Fiona, you may call us at 636-1350 and make her feel welcome to her first trip to California, and she's come to Santa Rosa.
So wait a minute. Steve Garner, he's pretty good with, not imitations, but, you know, let me hear you speak something in Scottish.
I don't know. I'm put on the spot here. I better rehearse.
Okay.
I can't speak Gaelic. Are you fluent in Gaelic?
My husband tried to learn Gaelic.
Isn't it one of the last remaining places in all of Scotland where it's spoken?
Absolutely, South Uist is. And he felt he should learn the language because the demographics of South Uist are such. He's got an elderly population. And in fact, when they're ill, it's quite nice for them to speak in Gaelic, but it's incredibly difficult.
Difficult language.
You really need him in here. He'd give you a few words.
Well, where is he in Scotland now?
No. He's gone to the Snoopy Museum.
Oh, that's the best response I could have asked for. Let's start with The Forager's Kitchen, which is just a magical book. Not only is it chock full of great information about the ins and outs of foraging, but it's poetic and it's lyrical. And there's all these literary references in the book, and it's much more than just a how-to book. That's what I need to say about that.
So one of the things that you say, as a forager, there are several things that you say that we need to touch on, but one that really hit me was the idea of, if you're foraging, accept the idea that you can have a fruitless expedition, that it's okay to come back with an empty basket.
Well, it's not about miserable, but
but it's not about quantity or about that. And the tendency for all of us is, I have to have a whole big basket and show what I've done. But in the process of doing that, if that's what's motivating you, then you're likely to overharvest.
Where our house is in Angus, we have lots of chanterelles in the autumn, in late summer. And I remember going there one year and there were some Italians who'd come out from Dundee, which is a local.
Those Italians.
but it was so sad because when I pick my mushrooms, I have my basket and I have my knife. And I just saw them pulling up all the moss and putting it into a plastic bag. And even when you go to the supermarket, you know, you've got a paper bag by the mushrooms because they sweat. And that made me really, really sad. But when I go foraging, or when I used to go foraging with number six, that's the one at Santa Barbara, Maxim, you know, he'd always come home with lots and lots of mushrooms. And then you think, I'm just going to give them to all my mates. But your mates can go and pick their own mushrooms. You shouldn't be picking for your mates.
I talk about interesting stories. Chapter one, flowers and blossoms. You talk about edible flowers. And then, of course, the elder vines. And you mentioned, here's something I would never have known, is that Judas Iscariot supposedly hung himself from an elder tree.
Well, I mean, I loved researching for that book, and I obviously picked up on that along the way.
So can I touch on something just before that? You talk about ground rules for foraging, which I think is really important because I think a lot of people are kind of mindless out there, or especially people who are just starting in their foraging thing. So what are some of those ground rules that you think are important?
Well, in The Forager's Kitchen, I don't have any recipes with roots. And I did that quite deliberately because that was to do with sustainability. And in the seaweed book, seaweed doesn't have a root, it has a holdfast. And certainly when I wrote that book, I kind of thought, well, I think a lot of the research that I did told me that the growing part of the seaweed was from the holdfast. And I've since learned that that's completely wrong. You know, different seaweeds have different areas from which they grow, like it might be the frond. So there's an awful lot to learn there. And certainly in the second edition of the Seaweed in the Kitchen, I have used some little, what I call sea beans, which are the holdfasts of something called sea spaghetti, which I don't know if you get in this area. Sea spaghetti. Yeah, yeah. Now, should you be harvesting that? Because, you know, if you're ripping all of that up, a bit like the root of a plant, is it going to carry on growing? Well, I mean, it's just about being greedy, isn't it?
But isn't it against the law? Isn't it against the law in Scotland to dig the roots?
It's complicated. We've got England, Scotland, and Wales, and they've got different foraging laws. And even with the seaweed, you know, the laws are different. I have to say, I think going and foraging where there is a lot of something, like a bramble, a blackberry, you know, taking a small basket of those to put in an apple and blackberry crumble or whatever you're going to make, I don't see any problem with that. It's a greed and it's a commercial harvesting of the foraging ingredient, which is increasingly popular in restaurants in the UK to have foraged ingredients. And that I can't get my head round. I don't organise. I'm sometimes asked to do foraging sort of forays and take people out and to be paid to show people how to forage. And I've always said no. But I'm in a privileged position where I don't have to go and earn some money by foraging. And I'm sure that there are ways of teaching people to forage in a sustainable way. So I'm not saying that I think sort of businesses like that are wrong, but I just think we have to be very careful.
Well, you have in big bold letters in there in this section, if in doubt, leave it out.
I love it. Yeah, yeah. Cause, especially with mushrooms, because you might kill yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's happened here, you know, that people, even people who are experienced mushroom foragers have gotten either sick or died or something because there are so many similarities between various kinds of fungi.
I have to say I'm very careful. If you look in the forager's kitchen, there aren't very many mushroom species in there, and it's because I don't know enough about mushrooms. The great thing about seaweed is we haven't found a poisonous one. There's one that grows quite a long way out to sea, the Desmerestia species, which gives off an acid, and so if you put it in the bag, it will kill all the other seaweeds. But I've never even seen that one.
So, you know, what we recommend to people is we have in Sonoma County, the Sonoma County Mycological Society is to join. And they take trips, foraging trips all the time. So you're going with somebody who knows what they're doing. And I think that is so important for anybody who thinks they want to do that, especially in the beginning, or absolutely in the beginning, is go with somebody who knows what you're picking.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And if you want to learn more about local seaweed here on the Sonoma coast, Heidi Herman is a great resource. We've had her on the show before. She has her own company. She's called, actually, her nickname is Queen of the Tides.
Oh.
She's just wonderful. And she has a business called Strong Arm Farm. And she harvests and processes seaweed. And she's just a storehouse of information. If people want to go on her website, Heidi Herman knows what
I'll mention another one. And she teaches for this company called Forage SF. So foragesf.com. And Heidi teaches there, and a number of people teach there. And they teach not only about mushrooms, but also about wild plants, and interestingly, also about seaweeds.
We'll take a break at that point. Fiona Bird joining Chef John Ashenby in the K.S. Hartle Kitchen. Two books we're speaking about, The Forager's Kitchen, over 100 field-to-table recipes, and also Seaweed in the Kitchen, The Coastline Kitchen. You can see and meet Fiona this afternoon at Omnivore Books in San Francisco on Cesar Chavez. She's there from 3 to 4 this afternoon. She'll have autographed copies of her books. You get to meet her. And by the way, Fiona, will there be tastes of anything for folks that stop by the bookstore this afternoon? Anything to sample?
Well, I have bought some seaweed biscuits, yes. Mm-hmm.
Seaweed biscuits.
Yeah. That's like a cookie, isn't it?
We'll find out when we return. Yeah. This is KSRO.
Join the switch to crystal clear KSRO FM, 103.5 Santa Rosa, Windsor, 94.5 Petaluma. Hear the difference.
Hey, Sonoma County. Thank you for making Creams Heavy Duty Towing the number one rated heavy duty towing company in Sonoma County. Creams Class A drivers are certified with the California Tow Truck Association and have successfully completed the heavy duty training course. Each driver is background checked and cleared with local law enforcement, so you can be assured you, your family, your staff, and equipment will be safe and secure. Creams has the equipment and expertise to tow or transport bobtails, tractors, trailers, motorhomes, limos, buses, service trucks, and all commercial vehicles. Don't scream. Call Creams. No rig too big. Creams Heavy Duty Towing is proud to be a family business locally owned in Sonoma County since 1977 and will proudly be here helping the community as we all recover and rebuild. Call Arlene at Creams, 707-588-1250.
And now, here's a health update from the Marin-Sonoma Mosquito and Vector Control District.
In Sonoma and Marin counties, being outdoors hiking, camping, and enjoying the fresh air is what we do. Living in the tall grasses on the hillsides and the fallen leaves along the trails are ticks. Ticks are year-round in Marin and Sonoma counties, so be sure to protect yourself from ticks and tick-borne diseases by applying a repellent containing DEET to exposed skin. Wear light-colored clothing with long sleeves and long pants and check yourself for ticks. Don't forget to check your pets for ticks, too.
The Marin-Sonoma Mosquito and Vector Control District is an independent special district committed to protecting public health from mosquitoes and vector-borne disease. All programs and services are funded through benefit assessments and property taxes. Services are provided to all residents in Marin and Sonoma counties at no additional charge.
Learn more about ticks at msmosquito.com.
It's fun, it's exciting, and it's like going to a concert.
Your winning career starts at Grayton.
I'm Simon, supervisor in table games. I've been with Grayton since day one. I started off as a student in the dealer school, and 5 years later, I'm supervising.
Grayton Resort and Casino is now hiring for table game dealer positions and more. Work in a fun and fast-paced environment. Apply today at GraytonResortCasino.com.
Message and data rates may apply.
What if there were a top-ranked business degree that gave you access to world-renowned faculty leaders and mentors, but on your schedule? The W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University is now accepting high-quality applicants for its online MBA, Information Management, and Business Analytics Master's programs. Learn more about the W.P. Carey business degrees online. For more information, text RANK to 79645. That's RANK to 79645.
Together, we can turn a stairwell into an ER at a moment's notice. Together, we can turn a rescue ship for refugees into a maternity ward. Together, we can vaccinate 710,000 people in just 11 days. Together, we are Doctors Without Borders. Doctors Without Borders goes where others don't to provide life-saving medical care. Learn more at doctorswithoutborders.org.
With Sonoma County's most accurate, most dependable forecast, here's Daniel Trucios on the KSRO Weather Watch.
Occasional rain for the weekend, overcast today at 62, 57 on the coast with possible showers, rain overnight, low 51, 52 on the shores. Periods of rain for tomorrow at 56, 54 in Bodega Bay. Monday, a few clouds at 60, 57 on the coastline. Depend on weather every 30 minutes on FM News Talk 103.5 and 94.5 KSRO.
By yon bonny banks and by yon bonny braes, where the sun shines bright, oh, Loch Lomond, where me and my true love were ever one to gay, on the bonny, bonny banks of Loch Lomond. So you'll take the high road, and I'll take the low road, and I'll be in Scotland afore ye. But me and my true love will never meet again.
Oh my gosh.
Bunny, bunny,
she's dancing
you're
in the studio.
Really into this, yeah.
It's Fiona Bird.
There that departed on yon shady glen, on the steep, steep side of Belonan, where in the purple hue the Highland hills review, and the moon coming out in the gloaming.
Fiona's a former BBC MasterChef finalist. She divides her time between Angus and the outer Hebridean island of South East, where her husband is the local doctor. She's often seen on a bicycle with a basket full of seaweed and has corrected us. She is often late for church. She's the author of Kids Kitchen, The Forager's Kitchen, and Seaweed in the Kitchen, and we're spending time with her this morning live in the KSRO kitchen, myself and John Ashen. Let's dive into The Forager's Kitchen in just a moment, reminding you that she will be appearing live at Omnivore Books in San Francisco from 3 to 4 this afternoon with autographed copies of her book and a chance to taste a few little seaweeds here and there. So there we are, Forager's Kitchen. It's as arranged a chapter one. We have flowers and blossoms, the edible flowers, the elders, the honeysuckles, the sweet violets. I love that you suggest that more people should name their daughters honeysuckle.
Well, when I was at St. Andrews, a couple we knew had a baby and called her Honeysuckle, and she's now quite a famous actress, Honeysuckle Weeks.
Oh. So the other thing I learned here is that Sweet Violet, the wild violet out there, that because it's difficult to see, that's where the term shrinking violet came from, which is...
That's such a lovely expression,
isn't
it?
Yeah, it is.
Don't be a shrinking violet, especially not on a radio show.
There are these wonderful revelations and thoughtful comments on all of these.
Oh, I'm so glad you like it because, do you know, that's, I mean, I love cooking, but I loved writing that book.
So let me ask you a question. With something like honeysuckle, you're talking about the wild plant here. Can one use cultivated honeysuckle to make these recipes?
Well, I would imagine you can, providing you don't use... What I've learned... I mean, you have to remember I'm self-taught here. With the flowers, I tend to say avoid the green bits because they make it taste a little bit bitter. Yes. I think with the honeysuckle sorbet, we had a chemical reaction there, if I remember rightly. Oh. It changed colour, which is amazing. I wish I was a scientist. I'm not.
You know, I noticed that there's an ingredient that pops up quite frequently in your book, and it's three letters. It's gin.
Yes. You can have seaweed gin. That's from the Isle of Harris now.
Is that right?
Absolutely.
Seaweed gin. Have you ever heard of that?
Harris gin. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
It's made from sugar kelp.
Okay. And there's many applications that gin can be used in a lot of these recipes.
Well, gin, especially because gin, I think most people know, it has all kinds of stuff in it, sometimes as many as 30 different berries and herbs and all of that stuff.
Do you think, the thing that worries me slightly, though, about all these botanical gins is can you actually taste the individual ingredient? I mean, I came across one recently that had sea thrift in it. That's the sea pink. That grows on the cliffs, and I have tried eating it. It tastes a little bit like honey, but I'm not sure how I would taste that if there were lots of different flavors in there. And that's, you know, that's why when I do, I hope you'll find with that book that I have tried to let the forage ingredient shine, and especially with the seaweeds, when you're muddling them all up, it's quite difficult to know which is which.
Chapter two, we have woodland and hedges, and that's dug fir, stinging nettles, hazelnuts, the fungi, chickweed, watercress. I love the, listen to this, Christmas tree cookies, of course, using the dug fir. That's very aromatic. And mince pie sprinkled with finely ground coconut and Douglas fir icing sugar. John, that should be appearing in your next book.
It actually, in my last book, I talk about pine needles, the little, the tender. And it's interesting how around the world, this taking the very, right now, the very young little growth at the end of certainly Douglas fir, but other pine trees too, is used everywhere. The Japanese are very fond of using pine needles and things to flavor and to make delicious dishes with.
Well, I would tell you why I homed in on Douglas fir, because we live quite close to Perth, and the oldest Douglas fir in Scotland was brought across to Scone Palace. And I found some in the woods behind the Angus house. So I thought, oh, I've got to use that.
So is it native Douglas fir to that
no,
part of the world?
No,
I think it came from here.
It's come from the States, to Scotland, that one.
I like that you give the colloquial names for many of these, like stinging nettles. Is this, couldn't be any better. The 7-minute itch. I think that's delightful for stinging nettles. You do have to be careful, don't you, when you're dealing with those.
So you have this beautiful picture in here of a nettle puree with poached eggs on top of it.
The color contrast.
Oh, it's gorgeous. Yeah. And so the thing about nettles, especially stinging nettles, is once they're heated, cooked, they're no longer stinging.
No, that's correct. Yeah. But from a culinary point of view, you have to get them when they're young.
Yes. Yeah.
Before they get tough.
You know what's interesting? They show up here about beginning now in our farmers' markets because they're still just coming out of the ground and all that stuff. So for about 3 or 4 weeks, we'll have so you don't have to go gather them yourself and feel like fire ants are biting your hands.
In chapter 3, fruits and berries, blackberries, you admonish us, don't pick them after October 10th.
Well, I always thought it was Michaelmas Day, which is actually the 29th of September. But when I was researching this, it was supposed to be the old Michaelmas Day, which is not the 29th of September. So I learned, I don't know. Anyway, I don't think the devil's really going to get you, is
he? But I love what you said, because the devil may spit or worse on the berries. Did you ever hear that? That seems like an old wives' tale. But quince is in there. Did quince grow on the island where you...
Definitely not.
Not. Mm. But you have. But you can forage for them other places, certainly.
Well, there's a quince tree very local to my mama. So, at certain times of the year, I'm looking at the blossom. And sometimes, because my mother lives in England and I'm going south and I know they're not quite ripe, I still take them back all the way up to Scotland.
What in the world is Wild Rumble de Thumps?
That's a Scottish recipe, which I just tweaked a bit with a few. I've put some nettles in it, haven't I? It's got neeps, it's got swede and tatty potato in it.
But say it. You say it so much.
Rumble
better.
Thumps.
Rumble thumps. We don't have recipes like that here.
No, and I think if you put it, can you imagine putting that on a menu in a restaurant? You wouldn't sell one.
I think it's wonderful.
Well, I suppose, It's using root vegetables. It's cheap, and I suppose it's poverty food, really.
I love what you wrote about sweet Sicily.
Oh, I love that. I love sweet Sicily.
I can tell, because you wrote, sweet Sicily grows by streams and on country lanes with a tendency to lean on dry stone dikes or bridges as it dances in the breeze.
There is one particular bridge in Angus when I drive across it and I see the sweet Sicily out. And it has that beautiful sort of lacy flower. And early in the season, before the leaves have got blotches on, which doesn't look quite so good later on in summer, it's just beautiful.
And you can candy them.
I chose sweet Sicily because you have to be quite careful with the carrot family.
Yes.
And so I didn't want people poisoning themselves off with hemlock. Mm-hmm. Yes. And the thing about sweet Sicily is when you bruise the leaves, you can smell the aniseed. So I felt quite safe encouraging people to forage that ingredient.
So you have a love of, I can tell, just because of the number of recipes, of ramps in there.
Which
grow well there? Because they grow
do, they grow in the woods behind the Angus house. And the wild garlic, when you are walking the dog in sort of April, you just smell the wild garlic everywhere. And I remember as a child, that was probably one of the first ingredients, that wild ingredients that I thought, hey, I can smell garlic. And this is in the 70s before, it was cool to have garlic in absolutely everything in the UK. In Scotland, you quite often find wild garlic up the driveways of big Scottish houses because it was so smelly they didn't want it in the kitchen garden.
One of the recipes that I would love to try is smoked haddock, dulse, and watercress soup.
Unfortunately, you don't see smoked haddock out here. They used to bring it from the East Coast out here years ago, but none of the grocery stores carried. I went to school in Boston, so right. We would make Finn and Hattie was yeah. what we called us all the time. I took it for granted, but you just don't see this out on the
West
Coast.
No, in the Midwest, they have smoked whitefish.
Whitefish,
which
yes.
we never see out here no. either, which is too bad. But we have other smoked things that are really pretty delicious.
And you even had a recipe for razor clams. And we had an author on several months ago who knows more about razor clams than anywhere in the country. They're predominantly sourced from Washington State and sometimes in Oregon. But I was surprised at you.
Well,
it's a tough little clam to forage.
Well, do you know that I learned how to forage razor clams on Eriskay, which there's a the U.S. are joined by causeways. And there is a tidal beach there, and I was absolutely useless at it. I was taken down by a crofter, and he left his dog tied to a rock, and he took his shoes off. And I had my dog, and I had my shoes on, and I was making a noise, and he didn't really tell me what to do. And I said, should I be taking my shoes off? Should I put the dog back up at the rock? And he said, aye. And, you know, I managed to forage a clam quite quickly mm-hmm. because one poked up and I just happened to grab it, and the next time I looked at his carrier bag it was full and I just had this one. Anyway, I then met a rather lovely forager. Well, she forages razor clams called Anne-Marie Collier, and she was just great. She said, now come on, they're really stupid. What we need to do is we wait. They're really silly, these razor clams. When the tide comes in, they come up, so just it's a time you go and forage them. And in fact, number six, Maxim, he's quite persistent, and he will. If I go foraging clams with Maxim, we now come back with a quarter of a bag full. But it's
we'll
great.
Take a break, and when we come back, we'll spend a little bit of time with the seaweed book, and then we will give away an autographed copy of The Forager's Kitchen. Over 100 field-to-table recipes written by our guest in the KSRO kitchen this morning, live and direct from Scotland, her first visit to the U.S., and she chose to come to Santa Rosa. And I applaud her for that. Fiona Bird, you can read her writings. Do you have a website where we can learn more about you, by the way?
I should say yes to you. I've got a Facebook page for the Forager's Kitchen.
All right.
And I put lots of foraging photographs on Instagram.
Okay.
At Outer Heb Forager.
Spell it, please.
O-U-T-E-R, Heb, H-E-B, Forager, F-O-R-A-G-E-R.
Back after this.
Sonoma County's local news, weather, and traffic station, FM News Talk, KSRO, 103.5, 94.5.
Sonoma County Sunrooms has built a reputation for building attractive and functional outdoor spaces, sunrooms, and exterior remodeling for pre-existing homes. We also work with home builders and contractors. If you would like to add a unique touch to a home you're building, we would like to talk with you. The options for patios and add-ons are endless and include everything from sunlit rooms to barbecue pits and water features. Take a look at the photos and videos on our website, SonomaCountySunrooms.com. To incorporate a one-of-a-kind exceptional addition to your next home building project, contact us today. Call 586-2710 or email builders at SonomaCountySunrooms.com. We proudly serve Sonoma, Napa, Marin, and Mendocino counties, have been in business for over 25 years, and are continuing to grow. Contact SoCo Sun for an extra element of functionality and breathtaking space to your homes at 586-2710.
If you're selling a home in Sonoma County, you know the fires have changed everything. It's more important than ever to have an agent who really knows the market. That's why you should call Mike Kelly.
It's a different landscape these days. You're dealing with insurance companies, lawyers, inspectors. I can help you get through all of this stuff and sell your home the right way with less hassle.
If you've been affected by the fires, you need the Mike Kelly difference. Let Mike use his Sonoma County resources and connections to get you through all the obstacles, and his market knowledge to help you set the right price.
There'll be a lot of homes coming on the market, so now's the time to list yours. Show me your home and I'll show you three quick and easy tips to maximize the return on your investment, even if you don't use me.
If you want the Mike Kelly difference, you've got to call Mike. Find Mike at MikeKelly.com or call Mike at 707-322-8503. 707-322-8503.
There's nothing small about your business. Your passion, your hours, your reputation, it's all huge. Your partnerships, even bigger. With Dell Small Business Technology Advisors, you'll get the tech, advice, and one-on-one partnership to help your business grow. Because with reliable Dell PCs with Intel Core processors, you can focus on what matters most, getting business done. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with an advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
Well, we actually need 3 hours, or at least, with Fiona Bird, because we just touched the surface of The Forager's Kitchen, and then we want to just touch briefly on the Seaweed book before we have to say goodbye, because she has to get back to San Francisco to appear at Omnivore Books in San Francisco from 3 to 4 this afternoon. The Seaweed book, this is very near and dear to your heart. You're a forager. You were born to forage. Seaweed is your, it sounds like, your mission in life is to spread the word about the multiple uses, both nutritionally and medicinally, so many applications for seaweed in the world.
So who were the Seaweed Sisterhood? What's that all about?
Well, I just stumbled across this group of people, and I mean, you'll have to stop me because when this book is reprinted, I had to rewrite that whole chapter.
Yeah.
The rest of it was just tweaking here and there, and I just suddenly found that there were these Victorian ladies who'd gone and collected seaweed. And I mean, they weren't cooking it, so they weren't doing quite the same thing as me, but they were pressing it, and then they were sending their pressed seaweeds off to professors, because at this time these ladies couldn't go to university, and so they were helping the professors learn all about seaweed. And what has happened to me is there is a lovely professor called Mike Geary who I said to him, your ears would definitely be burning when I go and talk about seaweed, because I have my iPhone. I go down to the beach where I don't have reception, but I take a picture of the seaweed and I come back and I email it to Prof Geary, a crossing in Ingleway, and I say, oh, what's your seaweed? You know, especially when I said earlier about the different carrageens, and I thought, this isn't Mustard Copper Stellatus, this isn't Condus Crispus, I think it's a carrageen, but I'm not sure what it is. And he sent me the most wonderful email back, which said, hybrid. Or he sends me emails back and says, I don't quite know, but I think this. And he's nurtured me, because to begin with, he would just answer my questions. And then as we've gone along, he's just fed me little snippets. Like, I thought I'd discovered the seaweed ladies, the sisterhood, but obviously he knew all about them, but he wasn't going to tell me. And then he said to me when I was doing the revision, hey, there's an Irish one, check out this one.
We're she down died to the last 29. Minute. I have to ask you, Fiona, for your favorite number today between 1 and 12.
Six, because I've got six kids.
Caller number six. What better reason than that? We'll win an autographed copy of The Forager's Kitchen by Fiona Bird. Over 100 field-to-table recipes. You will cherish this. It's wonderful reading. And thank you for coming to Santa Rosa, California, in your first visit to the United States. You're back to San Francisco for your appearance at Omnivore this afternoon. Please come back when you could spend more time. We'll go out foraging on the coast.
I would love to do that.
Next week, we'll be tasting the great wines from the Atlantic Seaboard Coast of Virginia, North Carolina.
Those guys are back again.
Our annual hybrid it's grapes fun. Of America. It's a fun. Great show. Don't miss that. Stick around. Clark Wolf at the table following the news. And then it's great wine talk for the afternoon. I'm Steve Garner. Join us for Garden Talk next week and the Good Food Hour with Chef John Ash. This is KSRO.